From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. For companies looking to expand or make a big move, not all states are created equal. So where does Georgia stand in the rankings of the most business-friendly states? The airport billboards and Governor Deal declare Georgia to be number one. If you consult Forbes magazine, however, Georgia comes in sixth. So what's being measured and what does that mean? To help us understand the rankings and the scouting process for businesses, Tom Smith is with us. He's professor at Emory's Goizueta Business School. Tom, welcome. Welcome.
Hey, how are you doing?
Very well. Glad you could be with us despite the delayed school opening this morning. Also with us is Forbes senior editor Kurt Bodenhausen. Kurt, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, Kurt, first of all, what do these lists actually mean?
That's a good question. We are not the only ones that do this, obviously, and Governor Deal, I think, is referencing another one of our competitors. But really, from our standpoint, this is not a perfect science by any stretch. There's different ways you can measure this. We use it really as a jumping off point, a conversation starter for people, and in particular for our readers, to get them interested in how these different states match up from their economic climates and their business potential.
So what are you measuring in that economic climate and business potential?
Well, from our standpoint, we look at six broad categories, 40-plus metrics, and we measure business costs. We look at the labor supply, regulatory environment. We look at the current economic climate, and then we look at the growth prospects of the state. And then the last thing we look at is the quality of life.
Tom, you, as a business professor, would you add anything to those metrics in that ranking?
Well, I haven't looked at the methodology that they use. I think that a lot of times when people are trying to identify what's important for businesses, they look at things like infrastructure, the ability for businesses and people to move around a city or a municipality or a state, tax climate, things of that nature, education of workforce. I do believe that you mentioned, the supply and demand of your labor, but also how educated your workforce is or how tech savvy they are. I mean, different companies have different needs, clearly. And so, if you're looking to have a highly educated or a tech-savvy workforce, that's one thing versus just pure number of people, that's something else. And so the methodology and, how you're weighting each one of these categories makes a big deal as to, where a state would fall on a ranking list.
Kurt, how about criteria like quality of life? You said that was a measurement, but how do you actually put a number on that? Cost of living, for example, cost of housing, the amount of time you spend on the road commuting.
Right. Well, those are all things we look at, actually. We look at cost of living. We look at commute times. We look at crime. We look at education. We look at the schools. We look at the health of the populace. And we also look at more general things like recreational and cultural opportunities in the state. But to Tom's point, every company is looking for something different. This is a broad ranking what we're looking at. There is a big difference between Intel locating a multi-billion-dollar microprocessor plant and a five-person startup.
Right.
They're very different things, or a distribution center, an Amazon distribution center. I mean, you're looking at very different things in terms of the technical skills you need, and when you're measuring states, there's also very different areas within a state. So California. We measure California, and they finish in the middle of the pack. But California is a very diverse state. I mean, it's in the top 10 economies in the world if it was just a country by itself. And California has vastly different areas across the entire state.
Right. I noticed that you also have rankings for cities, for example, and then places for small business. So as you said, it's a conversation starter. But what role do the local municipalities, city governments, state governments play in that kind of conversation? For example, willingness to create tax incentives for businesses. Where do those conversations begin?
Well, I think that you know, whenever a large company, I mean, right, your colleague just mentioned large companies coming into the state, those conversations always have to start with the governor's office. They always then trickle down to, you know, whoever the leaders are of individual municipalities. You know, and people understand large organizations are talking to each other to say, oh, these are the kind of tax incentives. This is what they're willing to give you. These are the kind of, you know, these are the kind of zoning regulations that they're willing to forgive, or these are the kind of easements that they're willing to negotiate, what have you. For a smaller company, you know, those kind of conversations are happening at the, you know, and the community grassroots level, where you say, oh, this is North Fulton Chamber. And they say, yeah, we've got great people here. We'd love to have you move into Alpharetta. We'd love to have you move into Sandy Springs. And the governor's not making a phone call for, you know, for a 10-person operation. And so, you know, the level of interaction is very dependent on, you know, how many billions of dollars you're going to bring to a state.
Well, of course, there have been movements in some places to Boston, for example, to not host the Olympics, not draw them in with all sorts of incentives, or to not be a contender for Amazon's HQ2. So is it that the citizens of the state, there's a little bit of NIMBYism going on, they just don't want it in their backyard? Or do you think they really have a sense of the cost of not having these kind of big businesses in the state?
Well, I think, you know, from the ranking standpoint, I just think the state used these as marketing tools. But in terms of attracting big companies, I mean, every community attracting a big business isn't necessarily a positive. One, if you're going to roll out the red carpet and the incentives don't make it worthwhile. I mean, the incentive game, you know, I don't think incentives is first on the list in terms of what companies are looking at, but it certainly sweetens the pot. And we saw it with the Amazon situation, which has put economic development and site selection at the forefront with this beauty pageant over the past year plus. But attracting a big company obviously isn't perfect for every community. And I think a lot of residents worry. You bring up the Olympics, which is a very good point. The infrastructure of many communities cannot handle a large influx of workers, or in this case, a large event that's going to attract tens of thousands of people to the city.
That's... Yeah, if I can echo.
Yeah, please.
If I can echo a little bit of that, you know, I heard a report on your station after Amazon had announced where they were going to move, that people who are already living in those communities are saying, wait, this is going to push me out of my community. You know, the cost of my living is going to go up, or the cost of my apartment or condo or house or whatever else. What's going to happen to real estate? What's going to happen to traffic? So there are different people have different incentives and different motives, and they might see like a business development as being a negative for them. So the whole, you know, not in my backyard kind of mentality, where, you know, the governor's office says, look, we're going to increase the tax base. Your tax burden is going to go down. But if all of a sudden, you know, this company's moving into my neighborhood, I say, yeah, but my traffic is going to go up. My commuting time is going to go up by 30 minutes. I can't find a parking place at the local grocery store. So everybody's perception as to the benefits and costs of business moving in are different depending on where you're standing on that spectrum.
Well, I'm wondering, as an academic, have you ever seen an analysis of that, how much the cost of incentives versus additions to tax base has actually manifested?
Well, there are lots of studies as to what happens with, let's say, real estate pricing as a result of businesses moving in, or what happens to commuting time as a result of businesses moving in. And then almost all of those analyses then have to identify, well, how much weight or how do you value, let's say, the commuting time versus the reduced tax burden, right? Mm-hmm. Or how do you weight or how do you value the cost of living going up in an area? So you say, well, house prices just increased by 10% because it's become a very attractive neighborhood. Well, if I'm currently living in the neighborhood, that's terrific for me. But if I'm trying to move in the neighborhood, that's awful. So again, you know, in academic settings, you also have to put value on things that are very difficult to value.
So I'm wondering, elected officials do love to boast about Georgia's success in business, but local politics can also deter companies. I'm wondering, Kurt, from your perspective as an outsider, how is Georgia regarded in this way?
I think Georgia is regarded as having a very strong business climate. You've seen a lot of companies move to the area. I mean, it has a lot of existing big company headquarters in the area. And the growth prospects are strong. If you look at forecasts over the next 5 years, job growth is expected to be strong. You're expected the Georgia's economy is expected to grow among the top 10 in the country over the next 5 years. So I think that the business prospects from an outsider and from economist standpoint, Georgia looks very strong.
What do you think, Tom? What do you see from inside the state?
Yeah, I mean, I've been bullish about Georgia and Atlanta for a number of years. I mean, I come from the Midwest. I moved here about 11 years ago. And, I was very skeptical about, moving my family from Chicago to Georgia. But the truth is that this is a great place to raise a family. It's a great place to do business. My wife opened up her business here. And the truth is that most of the time you will find the interaction between business leaders and chambers and politicians to try to have lots of synergies. Like, how can we make this so that this business has more opportunities? There's always little, potholes in the road, if you will. But the truth is that
quite literally,
quite literally. But Georgia is a terrific place to do business. I'm very bullish about Georgia. I think that everybody should move their family.
So, Kurt, we didn't get number one. So, what made North Carolina number one over Georgia, for example?
North Carolina has been a consistent performer for us near the top. One of the big differences from our measurement really comes down to cost of doing business. We lean on Moody's Analytics for their cost of business measurement, and they've got North Carolina 10% below the national average, where Georgia is only 2% below the national average. So that's a significant difference. And when you get talking about between number one and number six in terms of overall rank, that there's a little bit of granularity there where that's not actually a huge swing. But both states have a lot of very strong things going for them, with a good labor supply, very business-friendly regulatory environment, as well as strong growth prospects.
Well, Kurt, we're not, no offense to you, but we're not taking down those posters at the airport that say we're the number one state to do business.
Fair enough. Keep them up.
And Tom Smith will be there helping us paste them. Kurt Bodenhausen, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.
He's senior editor for Forbes magazine. Recently, among their rankings for doing business, the top 10 states to do business, Georgia was number six. And Emory business professor Tom Smith, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much.